Chapter 42, Cutting Weight. When I was on the road, I had masterfully managed to cut down the contents of my backpack to just 14 kilos. I had started out with more, but along the way found a rhythm of getting by with very few clothes and a single gi. I enjoyed that. The feeling of being able to carry everything I needed on my back felt like an achievement, and I craved to feel that sense of freedom again after I returned home. In Copenhagen, I had lots of things in my apartment, and it didn't feel right. I started reading books on downsizing and simple living, and it resonated strongly with me. I didn't own my things. My things owned me. The gym was starting to do quite well, and it would have been so easy to fall into the trap of getting a nice car, a mortgage for a new home, and for luxuries to become necessities. To start building a pretty little comfortable prison for myself. Instead, I urged to free myself from possessions and anything that would wall me in. I had always been able to afford what I wanted because I wanted what I could afford. I didn't want to change that, no matter how tempting it might be. I was still together with the same girlfriend, and we just had a son. It was important to me that he would be able to experience the world just like we had done ourselves. The only thing that mattered was the ability to keep living a life full of adventure for all of us, and the flexibility to quickly act on any opportunities that might come along. So I started selling and giving away as much as possible of my possessions as I could, to the point where I pretty much just owned a laptop, some clothes, and a bit of furniture. My goal was optimal freedom, so the method had to be to let go of anything that would keep me stuck in one place, to be able to carry my entire life on my back. It felt fantastic, but there was one big thing that seemed impossible to let go of. The elephant in the room that I knew I had to address at some point. The one thing that, if I was completely honest with myself, reduced my freedom of movement more than anything. The gym. That decision was very difficult. I had spent 15 years building that place up from scratch, and I was nervously shaking when I finally one day proposed to my business partner that he could buy me out. Our personalities and views on how to run the place had grown widely apart over the years, and business-wise, we had been in a standstill for a long time. So in a sense, I longed to get out, but had been too afraid to do anything about it. We came to an agreement. I would still stay on board as a regular instructor and teach my classes as usual, albeit with more freedom to travel for seminars and camps as I wanted. When I finally signed the contract, the relief was intense. Quitting my job 10 years earlier and selling off material possessions in my apartment, I had felt like a relief. But this was a different league. I had just let go of the biggest thing I had ever created, and it felt incredibly good. My mind immediately felt lighter. So much stress, so many questions and decisions. In an instant, it was all gone. I was never going to log into that email account again. I felt bad for the employees, like I had let them down. But I had to take care of myself and follow my principles. My living expenses were cut down to a bare minimum, and I had no desire to buy anything. So with a bit of savings and the money I got from selling the gym, I could keep myself going for a few years while figuring out what to do next. It didn't take long. With all my focus now on BJJ Globetrotters and no one who had to agree on my ideas and decisions, I could go all in and do whatever I wanted. From a business perspective, that was incredibly refreshing and inspiring. Hosting the camps was the most fun thing I knew of, and the one thing that got me closest to the feeling of high-intensity traveling around the world with an overflow of impressions and new friends. The only thing that made sense was to try and do as much of that as possible. El Salvador had been a financially scary mouthful, and I had plenty on my hands at home with the gym, so I hadn't ventured outside of the safe camps in Copenhagen since. But with a newly found freedom to do anything I felt like, I was curious about experimenting with more international camps. I got a message out of the blue from Valentin, an excited guy from Austria who was running a small training group in Linz and also happened to be a high-level snowboard instructor. I had been snowboarding a bit in Sweden with my brother every winter and loved it, so when Valentin invited me to come visit him in the Alps, he quickly had my attention. With nothing holding me back and all the time in the world, it didn't take long before the ideas started rolling. Before we knew it, we were working on setting up a winter camp in the Alps. I already felt confident in doing summer camps, and there was a huge interest for them, so why not do something in the winter as well? A local on the ground like Valentin was the key to make something happen far away from home. We did our homework, man, just gotta show up tomorrow and enjoy the ride. I laughed hard today when I looked back through our email correspondence leading up to that camp. While we believed we had done our homework, the reality was much different. I'm pretty sure that the 66 participants had a great time, but behind the scenes, it was an absolute train wreck. And probably the one time in my life where I truly thought I was going to die from a stress-induced heart attack. Many valuable lessons were learned that week that I still take with me today, more than 60 camps later. Then things really took off. I did another trip to El Salvador shortly after the winter camp, and apart from the annual camp in Copenhagen, I also managed to expand to Belgium and the US that summer. I feel overwhelmed with joy in this moment, one of the guys at a camp in Copenhagen said as we walked down the street towards a music festival after a hard day of training, sun in our eyes, neon green leaves on the trees. I started to realize I was doing something right. If I could create such an experience for one person, what if I could do it for thousands? Having lived in Copenhagen for almost 15 years at that point, I really started missing the forest where I grew up as a kid. I randomly saw some pictures from a kid's summer camp in the United States and got all nostalgic about it. I emailed and called probably every summer camp facility I could find on Google and got an especially excited reply from a guy called Mike who worked at one in New Hampshire. He was more than eager to help me set up something, and I took the chance. I hadn't even seen the place, and before I knew it, 100 people had signed up and expected an amazing experience just like the big, successful camps from Copenhagen they had seen pictures of. But this was nothing like a camp in a pretty city where people would be staying in clean hotels and go sightseeing and eat ice cream in the afternoon after training. This was adults living in cabins in the woods, sleeping in bunk beds, and showering with spiders. It was what I had wanted for myself, but would everyone else like it too? To say I was scared would be quite an understatement. It was a long flight from Denmark, and I arrived late in the evening the night before the first day of the camp, together with a few friends. It was in the middle of a thunderstorm, and the rain was so heavy we couldn't see anything out of the window of the car as we pulled into the campground. Mud was flooding down the little hills, and thunder was roaring above our heads. Mike had told us to pick any cabin to sleep in, and he would meet us in the morning. It was pitch black as we walked around in the mud, eventually finding the cabins down by the lake. They looked old and worn out, built in wood decades ago. I opened the squeaky door to one of them, and the smell hit me. Piss on mattresses. Homesick kids had been wetting those beds summer after summer. The bunks were tiny, and I had to curl up in a fetal position to fit in one of them. I tried to keep my cool and laugh a bit about it to the two friends that had come along for the early arrival, but inside of me, I was in shock. What had I done? The next morning, 100 people would arrive and see this. They would all turn around on their heels, and any trust that anyone ever had in my ability to host jiu-jitsu camps would be shattered. The rain was hammering away on the roof, like it was trying to break in. I completely panicked, and my mind was racing with thoughts on how I could stop it in time. Perhaps I could email everyone and tell them I had called the whole thing off before they would leave home. I would have to refund everyone's tickets and accept losing all the money I had paid up front for facilities, food, staff, and mat rental. I was more embarrassed than I had ever felt. All that work for nothing. Exhaustion from traveling eventually got the best of me, and the next thing I knew was the sun hitting me in the face and birds singing outside the cabin. Beaten and depressed, I stumbled out of the bed and opened the door. The weather was perfect. The sun was rising over the crystal clear lake in front of me, and the sun hit my eyes. Birds were singing all around, and I found myself in the middle of a stunning green forest. The other cabin smelled fine. It was apparently just that one mattress. "This place is amazing," a stocky guy I had never seen before said with excitement in his voice as he walked up to me, hand reached out to shake mine. He was the first camper to arrive, and as I looked in between the trees from the terrace of the cabin, I could see more cars coming through the entrance. That was the moment when I understood that everything was going to be just fine. Mike came down the hill to welcome me, and we walked together on the little trail towards the sports hall. "How on earth did you convince 100 people to come out here in the middle of nowhere?" I clearly remember he asked. "I honestly have no idea," I replied. Things really took off from there. I added more camps, friends, and experiences to my yearly calendar than ever before. I was having a blast, and I couldn't get enough of it. I traveled several times a month. If it wasn't for a camp, then I would be around Europe, scouting locations for future ones. Every second week, I would stand in the Copenhagen metro station early in the morning with bags under my eyes. The station was always full of people, except they were all going in the opposite direction than me. While they were all trying to squeeze into the train going towards the city, I would often be completely alone on the other side of the platform to get on the train towards the airport. BJJ Globetrotters was rapidly expanding and starting to make waves in the BJJ community. I suddenly found myself being the figurehead of what could, by all means, be defined as an actual Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu affiliation. More and more people wanted me to be their instructor, to submit themselves to me being their professor. Especially as the camps and community grew, I felt that people looked to me differently. My best friend even told me it was weird to be around me in the bar at the camps because so many people wanted to be near me and talk with me. I didn't feel like I'd done anything to put myself on a pedestal, but I somehow found myself sitting there anyway. I didn't like it, and I realized that I had to actively do something to avoid going down that road. I wanted to stay on the same level as everyone else. First step was the decision to quit doing belt promotions. I would promote my own students at home, but I would no longer offer it as a part of seminars or even at camps. Instead, anyone in the community who, for one reason or another, were up for a promotion and didn't have an instructor themselves could be evaluated by all volunteering instructors at the camp. There would be a debate, a vote, and the result would decide on a belt promotion or not. Myself, I would purposely stay out of it. Next, I decided to start inviting as many black belt instructors as I could possibly fit in the schedule for each camp. That way, nobody would stand out as the one superstar, but instead we would all sort of drown in the noise of the many black belts around, myself included. It's hard to figure out who is supposed to be at the top of the hierarchy when there are too many there to pick between. It worked, and I truly started feeling that I was just another participant of the camps, another friend on a holiday with friends. Nobody was trying to buy me lunch, hoping that I'll put a stripe on their belt at the end of the camp. As an instructor, I could teach a few classes at the camp, but apart from that, keep my profile in the background. When my belt was washed enough times, the red bar started to fall off. I let it. No more stripes from me. A black belt is a black belt. Perhaps it is me who is overly sensitive about these things and takes it to an unnecessary extreme. But my personal focus on building honest, equal, lasting relationships with people of all walks of life and creating quality memories for myself and others laid a clear foundation for how I wanted to build my career as a black belt and ultimately for BJJ Globetrotters. The absolute last thing I want is a team grow guard, and I truly believe that it's a key factor in what has made BJJ Globetrotters such a big success.